Hello and welcome to The Life of an Entrepreneur. I'm Jan McCarthy with Entrepreneurial Voice. I can't even say it this morning. We're broadcasting live from skidrowstudios.com and we are Real Radio on the internet. And we're here every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And we're here to talk about entrepreneurship and share some business tips and practices and just talk about what the life of an entrepreneur is all about. And if you have any questions for myself or my guest, you can give us a call at 1-800-893-9562. And today I am interviewing Jennifer Beeler, and she is a licensed marriage and family therapist. And I'm so excited to have you on the show today. Hi.
Me too.
Welcome.
Thank you so much.
So I posted today that, you know, therapists are entrepreneurs too. And sometimes people think, they think of entrepreneurs as somebody who kind of opens up a store and that they are an entrepreneur, but really, you're an entrepreneur, artists are an entrepreneur, authors are entrepreneurs. You know, really, I think all of us have a little bit of entrepreneur in us. But how did you, what's your journey? How did you get started on this path?
That's a really great question. It actually started when I was in grad school, and I knew for a long time being a therapist was exactly what I wanted to do. And it was just a matter of really finding my path. And I found that one of the most important things in being in grad school and being an intern is to really put yourself out there and to really take advantage of being an intern. Because a lot of times we have this feeling that we have to know exactly what we want to do or exactly what field we want to go into. And the whole idea of having an internship is to be able to really try out a lot of different things. So I took that upon myself, and it was really important for me to also find places that had really amazing supervision and that really took it upon their treatment center to supervise their interns. So I went on my journey working with children, adolescents, adults, substance abuse, you name it, worked at the LA Gay and Lesbian Center to really figure out what my niche was. And as I started my journey, I found myself working in a couple treatment centers for substance abuse and eating disorders and found my love and really found a passion in a certain type of therapy that I specialize in, which is called dialectical behavior therapy.
And I haven't heard of that. So,
and you know what? You're not alone. A lot of people haven't. And actually, a lot of therapists don't know much about DBT, dialectical behavior therapy. I'll refer to it as DBT. They haven't heard of it at all either. And it was so funny because when you're in grad school, all you learn is that there's a certain type of therapy that goes really well with borderline personality disorder. And that's all you need to know for taking your licensing test and thank you very much. That's just what I just need to know. So what it is it's a therapeutic, a therapy that weaves mindfulness into a cognitive behavior therapy model. So dialectics is based off of the theory that two opposing ideas can coexist at the same time.
Oh, and we've always heard differently, right?
Yes. And... and especially people who struggle with, you know, severe disorders or eating disorders, or substance abuse, bipolar, that you really live in a very all or nothing or black and white mind frame. And really figuring out how to live in that middle path or that gray area is something that's so, so challenging. So it's this integration of putting together the emotional mind and the reasonable mind to make this beautiful piece called the wise mind. And that allows us to live in just a more mindful state. So it helps really regulate dysregulated people. And this therapy it's fairly new. Marsha Linehan she's the founder of DBT, and it was founded in the 70s. So, and it was really useful for the gold standard for treating suicidal clients. And they found it to be so effective with working with an array of different clients, even trauma, depression, anxiety. So because it comes from a very educational background of teaching, like I said, mindfulness and distress tolerance, how to regulate your emotions and how to have interpersonal effectiveness, so how to be effective in your relationships with other people as well with yourself.
Well, I love what you said, because as an entrepreneur, we do kind of have to find our niche. And in thinking about the fact that I want to go out and be a therapist, there's hundreds of thousands of therapists out there. And how do you stand apart? And how do you recognize what really speaks to your soul so that you can be authentic and you can be real about what it is that you're doing to help your clients? And so I appreciate the fact that you did two things that are really necessary. And I love how you talked about that you did internship and how helpful that was in really determining, will I really like this? Will I be effective at this? What does it really resonate with me? And then taking a look at how can I stand out in this field, and doing the education and research, not the education that's just required, but you did the research to find out more about this new therapy practice that could potentially revolutionize and change the mindset, while actually focusing on the mindset, but change the mindset of the way many people think about it. And those are some qualities that I think are very important when you're looking at being an entrepreneur. Well, whether you're looking at it or not, it's important to be able to distinguish all of those different factors. So,
yeah, absolutely.
I love that you did that. Now, were you the girl in high school that everybody came and talked to and shared their innermost secrets? And
you know, I did find myself in that role a lot, where people found themselves very comfortable at sharing their deep, dark secrets with me, and that there was a sense of safety, and that I had really, really great friends throughout my life. So I don't know if, you know, the safety came first, or we would have a lot of supportive friendships, and then the safety came later on, and we're able to just really connect and be vulnerable.
Yeah. So you said you kind of always knew you wanted to do this. Was there somebody in your life that you knew that was doing this, or what's your background of entrepreneurship and what's your background? I mean, not that you have to disclose any secrets if there are any, and there may or may not be, but I'm always fascinated by how someone gets to that point of knowing this is what they want to do. Was it somebody who influenced them? A lot of times we're influenced by the people around us. So people who become doctors, it's because they were doctors in their family and that kind of thing. So how did you get to this point, aside from the fact that you were that person that people enjoyed talking to and they felt comfortable and you loved being able to help and nurture?
Yeah, I think that's just my natural tendency is to really be a listener, and I felt like that was something that I was just naturally good at, and wanted to find some way to really access that and to use that in my career. And, you know, I think all children, either in elementary school, junior high school, everybody has gone through, you know, their own struggles or trials and tribulations of either bullying or finding their own self, family issues, whatever it may be. We've all experienced it. And I just really recognize a need, in myself and with other children and people, you know, growing into themselves, of hoping to find somebody that they can trust to really open up, and to be and to feel unconditional positive regard and feeling non-judged, because a lot of times we walk around with our own judgments in our sure. minds, and if we're feeling judgment about ourselves, then we're naturally going to feel that other people may judge us. So really wanting to be that, to provide that for when I first started my career, I had imagined myself working primarily with children, and now it's kind of it's shifted a little bit. but wanting to provide all that experience for people in my room, because I felt that was something that was really important for me growing up.
Well, it takes a big commitment to doing this. And were you, how did you go about, like, how do I go into practice by myself? I mean, they teach you how to be a therapist.
Not a business person.
But how did you have a mentor? Did you just study it? I mean, or did you make a lot of mistakes and figure it out along the way? What was your journey there?
I made it something important for myself to be a sponge to every place that I worked at and with my supervisors and colleagues, and to just inquire and want to know their story and see where, you know, how they got to where they got. And I've come across some of the most spectacular people, just remarkable, a lot of women in the field, and they were able to just really guide me and support me in making the next indicated step. So I don't feel that I don't see them as mistakes, but more as, you know, just what part of my journey that's unfolding in being able to get to where I'm at today. I just really recognize a lot of advisors and professors who've just been able to speak their knowledge of getting to where they're at. And whether it's, you know, taking a risk and leaving a really solid place financially, or where you have everything kind of set up for yourself and having your clients working at like a salary position job and you feel safe there, as opposed to, you know, really taking the risk and believing in yourself. And I've really surrounded myself with really strong and supportive and encouraging people that see in me, and they're able to share with me what they see in me, so they can remind me that I do have that strength and drive to get to where I want to go.
That's a really common theme that I see whenever I do this show, and the fact that no man or woman is an island. We're not out there just doing it all by ourselves, and we can really benefit so much by finding mentors, by surrounding ourselves with people who are supportive and can not only teach us. So not being so egotistical that we kind of like know it all, or I'm going to do this myself, but recognizing that we can learn a lot from others around us, being willing to put ourselves in that position of recognizing that there are others who have been down this path before and can contribute to saving us a lot of time and money and emotional toil in mistakes that we might make along the way. And not that we don't, I think we always have to make some mistakes on our own, just so we have to really learn those lessons we really need to learn. But we can benefit so much by surrounding ourselves with those positive people that are going to lead us in the right direction and guide us and contribute to our success. And that is just a very common theme that I see time and time again with the guests that I interview, of people saying, yes, well, I had this group. And so recognizing, A, that it's okay to ask, B, that it's important to surround ourselves with people who are supportive, like-minded, you know, positive, that aren't going to tear us apart. And not that sometimes people don't say, oh, well, there's a million therapists out there, and why would you go into that? You know, going to something more secure, you know? You've heard all the things about trying to get money from the insurance companies and all of these things that come up. And so I just wrote a blog this morning, actually, about the fact that entrepreneurs really need to be problem solvers. because there's problems that we encounter every day. Mm-hmm. And so how do you deal with that kind of think of not only, I mean, obviously you're helping your clients to solve their own problems, but then you have to deal with the problems in the business world.
Yeah. And I think that's where your support system comes in play again. of being able to really, again, have people that you can trust that they have your best interest at heart and that they've been through it and can give you the best guidance. So I find it really important to touch base with those people while deciding what the next step is to take, and or how to resolve an issue if I did make a mistake, and not allow it to paralyze me in being able to move forward, because I think that can be something that can happen with people that they can struggle with feeling paralyzed with making, gosh, I shouldn't have done that, and shaming themselves, kind of going into a shame spiral, as opposed to utilizing that experience of, okay, well, I've learned from that. So now what am I going to do? Which I think actually makes us that much stronger in the long run.
Yeah. And I think also finding people, when you say finding that support, finding people who can help you, whether it's hiring someone out that can take care of fielding phone calls and making appointments, and you focusing on what you do best so that they can focus on the things, still have your back, handling insurance claims, handling billing, handling the things that are a part of what you do. They're totally a part of what you do, but being able to separate that, and especially in your field, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it's one thing for the shopkeeper to own the shop, and yet you come in and you still give the shopkeeper the money. And yet in a profession like yours, there's a certain dividing line of that it's maybe not be as appropriate for you to be able to do that, and understanding those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So are you from here? Are you from California?
I am, born and raised.
Wow, so you're unusual to begin with, right? In the Los Angeles area, or Orange County?
Born in Los Angeles and raised mostly in Orange County.
Okay. So it just seemed natural to go ahead and have your practice here, because this is the land everybody wants to live here right now.
Well, so I have a few things that are going on with me, but I've spread myself where I actually work in both Orange County and LA.
So you have two offices.
Yes, I do. And I have two private practices, and I'm building mine in LA while also working at a treatment center called Westside DBT, which is in West LA. And as the name speaks for itself, that we specialize in dialectical behavior therapy, of what I was talking about earlier. And it's comprised of the most remarkable team of coming together and treating really high clients that struggle with a lot of issues that may be too difficult for therapists to see in their private practice.
So I really appreciate and am kind of fascinated about how you divide your time, because I live here and I live in Colorado, and people always go, how do you divide your time? Mm-hmm. And I go, well, I don't really know. It's just kind of based on how I feel. How do you divide your time especially as you're building your business? Mm-hmm. So you've got a practice here and you've got a practice in Orange County, which isn't so far away, but obviously it takes a lot of planning that, okay, on Tuesdays and Wednesdays and whatever, I'm at this one place, and however you divide it. But yet you're still trying to build it. So you tell these patients that, I say clients, but I meant to say patients, you tell them that they have to, where you have to wait, or are you building it with bringing on other therapists? How are you doing this?
That's a really great question. And I'm still figuring it out.
Okay.
And I find myself wanting to work my schedule around where I work at Westside DBT and being a part of that team, and then figuring out from that schedule what would make sense of making one day a full day of working in Orange County. And so I wouldn't split the days and, half day in Orange County, half day in LA. That
right.
would just be
right.
outrageous.
Exactly.
And really not good of me taking care of myself. So I found myself just scheduling around one of my primary places of work.
Well, in terms of taking care of yourself, it actually sounds like you're kind of feeding your soul in two different ways. And I really like that, because when you're working with the Westside
DBT,
mm-hmm. That kind of feeds your soul in the terms of this is teamwork. And this is a team that you can draw inspiration from and support in a way. And yet you're also a great contributor as well. And then on your own, you're able to really deal directly with your patients and help them. And that gives you that one-on-one kind of scenario where you can be very effective and really practice your profession,
mm-hmm.
and contribute to someone else's well-being. But what gave you, what was the deciding factor when you said, I'm going to have these three different locations that I'm going to concentrate on?
Well, I knew I had I had already started building a practice in Orange County, and I knew that my heart is definitely in LA. So I wanted to find more of my roots there.
I see.
And I didn't want to, and I don't want to give up what I have in Orange County.
Sure.
So that's really what spread me in both different directions.
Well, that makes sense. And I love that you recognize that there's a way to do both, and not in terms of like being superwoman, but more in terms of what is fulfilling to me,
mm-hmm.
and how can I serve my patients, but also serve what serves me as well. So I like that you took that direction.
So, thank you.
Good for you.
It's working so far.
Well, but a lot of people do. They struggle or they feel trapped, you know? So it's like, oh, I started my practice in Orange County and I don't want to give that up. But what can I do? And you found a way. Again, going back to that problem solving, but you found a way, mm-hmm. to like I said, feed your soul. And I think that's important for people to know that they can. And I'm sure that there are logistical difficulties in doing what you're doing. But it's also, it's taking you down the path of how you want to be involved and doing what you wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's great. And I would hope that our listeners would take some comfort in that, in knowing that the thing that most people might advise against, like, are you crazy? You're going to go up to LA. And but otherwise, how are you going to get back to your roots, so to speak, and be able to do something that you really like, but not give up the Orange County as well? So I want to let our listeners know that if they'd like to call in and ask a question, they may. Our number is 1-800-893-9562. And you can call in and talk to myself or Jennifer. We'd love to hear from you and answer any questions that you might have about entrepreneurship and how to find your own path. So So did you start out working in an office before you kind of went out, branched out on your own?
Therapy-wise?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because I have worked in an office at some points of my life.
Yeah.
But
I mean, once you became a licensed therapist, and even after you did your internships and like now you're official professional, you can hang your shingle on the door, what made you decide to start building your own practice or going in partners with somebody else and being a part of that?
Well, I like the flexibility.
Okay.
And I've always been the type of person to kind of march to the beat of my own drum.
One of my favorite sayings.
And being able, and I kind of thrive off of being, in different places and meeting new people and having different things going on. So it kind of keeps me stimulated and engaged through the process. So I did what I had to do of getting all the hours that I needed, getting licensed, getting as much knowledge as I could, not as I could, but I'm still, gaining.
Always learning.
Absolutely. All the time. There was just this moment where intuitively it was the next step and the right thing to do of, spreading myself and not spreading myself too thin, where like we were talking about earlier, where not taking care of myself, because that is going to, you know, that is a huge part sure. of being an entrepreneur and being a therapist on top of that too.
And being effective at what you do, because yes. there is a reason why they tell the parent to put the oxygen mask on themselves first before they take care of their child.
Yeah, I like yes. that.
Yeah, so, but not to interrupt your flow there.
No, please. That you find, you just kind of know who you are and how you work. That, of course, how I've, you know, managed and what I find exciting and what works for me is not going to be exactly what works for somebody else. And so there isn't one right way of doing something. It's just being able to find what you love and have passion for, and then really setting out at being able to attain that in a way that really suits you and is consistent to your work ethic, how you work, your personality.
So making that decision to go out on your own and have your own practice versus going into an established office where there are lots of referrals and additional clients that the one therapist who's very established can't see, so he's or she is able to refer them to you. Was that scary? How do you build your practice? How do you start from a few people that you know, and since you're probably not supposed to take on friends and family, you can't say, okay, all my friends and family come in and give me business. So how do you start from there? And what were you scared?
I naturally have a fearless personality. So I thrive off of getting to know people and doing new things and meeting new people and trying something different. So I have been blessed with that. And I definitely thank my lucky stars, and I'm grateful that that's part of my being. How it kind of goes back to really being a sponge to the professionals that I've worked with and who have really made a name for themselves in the field, and like the different treatment centers that I've worked at, and asking them a lot of questions and having them kind of through all my garble that I would like spit out at them, that they were able to really hear everything I was saying and then present it back into a more packaged, a prettier package where I can actually understand what I was really interested in. And so I have a colleague of mine who I worked closely with, and she had introduced me to a Women's Association for Addiction Treatment meetings that happen on a monthly basis. And oh my gosh, it is a remarkable experience. And I actually became the co-chair this year of this Women's Association because the opportunity presented itself and I just took it. That what it's called WAT, Women's Association for Addiction Treatment, and it's a networking experience where women come together, they network, and will also have guest speakers come in for continuing education and for professionals in the area to be able to share, you know, their research or their knowledge or their expertise to us so we continue to learn and grow in our own field. And besides it being so absolutely empowering to be in feeling all that energy of women getting together to become, you know, better at what they do and just the how much power there is in the room, that I have actually met so many women from San Diego to Orange County to Los Angeles, and just started putting my card out there, asking people to get coffee, and I didn't come at it in a networking way, right, because it didn't feel networking. It was more of a friendship.
Right.
Of I just want to get to know you.
Build in relationships.
Exactly. And the more people I got to know, the more it was kind of, you know, like the calling tree where there's one person at the top of the tree and they call three people, and then it's right. Their tree just becomes bigger and bigger. And the more one person I meet, then I meet two from that person, and then it continues to grow. And then I found myself meeting Sasha Ginsburg, who is she's the founder of Westside DBT, and her partner Aaron Lotz. And through them, I've continued to just even meet more and more people, and really embrace the empowerment of being a professional woman in this field.
That's great. And it also definitely helps to have them to refer you whenever there's someone that they feel would benefit from your services and your therapy and your programs and that kind of thing. How do you grow? How do you grow not just building your practice and having more clients and maybe even bringing on additional therapists within your office, but how do you grow in terms of writing books, creating programs, that kind of thing?
Well, writing a book is one of my aspirations before I die. That okay. is something that is going to happen. I haven't figured out what it's going to be, but it will be. I'm thinking about it. How I grow is a few things. So on kind of like the educational side, I like to go to seminars and just sit in and listen to the new presentations that people provide for therapists or people wanting to learn more in the field. And I like to read a lot. So you come into my house and there's all these therapeutic books all around my house and self-help books and wanting to just...
I'm laughing because mine's the same, but it's all on business. And self-help and travel.
Oh, that's nice. I have the Food Network magazine too.
Yes, I have food too, but I don't cook much anymore, but I still like looking at cookbooks. I've actually put a thing on my moratorium. No more cookbooks.
You start to collect them, and then I feel bad throwing them away because there's so many great recipes. So it's you have to get to a point where you need to stop.
Or at least make some of them, right?
That's true.
That's great. So reading helps you to grow. Oh, yeah.
Reading, attending seminars and trainings, and taking care of myself.
So what do you do to take care of yourself?
I hike and love to be outside. I have two dogs that really keep me active. And being able to explore the place that I live in or exploring other places and finding new restaurants and going out and being social. I'm very extroverted. And so it's important for me to nourish my soul through being able to be with my friends. Even if there's times that if you may be too tired, but to recognize that it may actually be more nourishing for your soul than depleting.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's important, taking time for yourself. And it sounds like you do that on occasion.
Mm-hmm. Well, and to practice what we preach. And so I really weave into, my practice is mindfulness. And so the art of meditation and being mindful is something that I practice throughout each day and waking up and being able to enjoy the moment with myself, whether it's through deep breathing or listening to music that can get me centered and grounded. Is really, really critical to start my day.
Well, it sounds like, are you a routine person then, it sounds like?
Yes and no.
I mean, you mentioned flexibility earlier, but there can be routine with flexibility built in.
Yes. And yes, so the mornings definitely, I think that, and I read an article that mentioned, I don't remember where I read, but the first hour and a half that you're awake is the most important for your whole entire day. And I actually find myself to have a very routine morning and doing the things that, I really enjoy and to really start my day of how I want it to look. And of course, not everything runs smoothly, but it gives me the strength to be able to get through if something not great happens.
Right.
I have it's important, especially in this field, to have flexibility, especially if clients don't show up, if a client is in crisis and that you need to stop things. So there definitely needs to be containment within your schedule, while also being able to have that flexibility to deal with things that kind of come at you that you weren't expecting.
Well, I enjoy hearing about entrepreneurs and how they schedule their day, their life, you know, but how they schedule their day and how they get motivated. And we, as entrepreneurs, we all have different kind of scenarios. I mean, some of us have lots of employees or we have meetings and appointments scheduled, and we need to be there at a certain time. And certainly that's a responsibility and something that may or may not be a part of our work. And so that will dictate what our schedule is. But then for those who don't have that, how do they schedule their lives? How do they get motivated? And I've actually read similar things. I'm constantly experimenting and thinking about this, like you mentioned, an hour and a half in the morning or not opening your email and sometimes open my emails first thing in the morning. But, you know, as I open my eyes, I look at my emails and see, is there anything critical? And sometimes I think, okay, I'm not going to open my emails for the first hour. And of course, that's the day that there is something critical, like, oh my gosh, I should have answered that right away. So I'm constantly going back and forth and trying to figure out what works best, actually, for me. Mm-hmm. But I like that concept of taking that first hour and a half and just being really mindful about, what is my day going to look like and what do I want to accomplish for today, and being peaceful. When I think back to like busy mornings with my children and trying to get them out to school by a certain time and everything being frantic and rushed and everybody oversleeping or not wanting to get up or, you know, that kind of thing. So that just sounds like such a lovely way to start your day and put you kind of like, as they say, get out on the right side of the bed, right? And be able to, you kind of are directing your day that way. So I like that. And I think I might try that like next week and see how that works for me.
Oh, I can't wait to hear about it.
Yeah, I'll try it. I'll report back next week. So we might try that. What's the toughest part? Is there anything that you deal with, the toughest part of being in charge? Because you're in charge of your business. And so what's the hardest part?
I think starting out was the looking at the business aspect is payment and money. And that's something that, you know, even for listeners who are thinking about getting into their own business, especially in the therapy world, is deal with the issues that you have around money.
And the fact that it's so emotional of what somebody's going through,
yeah.
I would imagine, too. I mean, just the problem that they have, and then whether they're capable of paying the money or not capable of paying the money.
Mm-hmm. And that's something that, you know, as a therapist, that you have to decide, you know, what you're willing to take on or not, and how that's going to look, if you're going to have a sliding scale fee but you also have to, you know what, you know yourself and to know that you're deserving and worth being paid for your services. And, of you know, I think it's obvious that people who go into the therapy world don't do it for the money. And if anything, we get a lot of spiritual paychecks too, and so it's a matter of being in that mind frame. It's kind of like going to a doctor's office, and it would be really weird if this expert that you go to runs all these tests to figure out what's wrong with you or what's going on, and the doctor says, "Oh no, that's okay. You know, you've already, you know, you don't have to pay anything, and I've got this." That would be really people would be taken back.
Well, we wouldn't expect that. There's certain things that, and I love this conversation that you're bringing up, because especially I work with women entrepreneurs, and mostly, although I do men too. But I find that women do struggle a lot sometimes between claiming their worth, yes, and accepting the money for it. There's a whole issue that goes around with this money thing, and being able to charge for it and still feel good, mm-hmm, and recognize what their value is, and then, you know, feeling like they have to give away the store. Mm-hmm. And I would think in the therapy world it might be a little bit easier, only in the sense that people are more familiar with what someone would normally pay for these kind of services, and maybe have just a smidgen of respect for it, but yet still, as someone having to collect and then especially being this nurturing person that you are, if someone comes to you with this story that they really need help but they're not able to pay, there's that tug of war, mm-hmm, that maybe goes on within yourself of how do I still stay true to who I am and help this person, but yet also stay true to who I am and recognize that my time is valuable.
Yes, absolutely.
I've worked very hard to get where I am. I've gotten all of not only the educational requirements, but I've gone out on my own volition and done everything I can to be up to date and as smart as I can possibly be about this subject and trying to understand everything I can so that I can help this person, and that's worth something too. And then just, mm-hmm, your time in general is worth something too.
Absolutely.
You know, regardless of whether you had any education surrounding it or not, it's still worth something. Our time is worth something, and attaching that value. So I am thankful that you brought that up, because sometimes it's like the elephant in the room, right?
Of course.
You know, so... And just, I'm sure it's sometimes on a day-to-day basis or a week-to-week or a patient-to-patient or all of those things and a continuing struggle. But hopefully we're able to recognize that it's one of the sayings I like, it's business, it's not personal. And that doesn't mean that you're not still going to give them everything that you would possibly do, you know, to make this experience valuable and beneficial to, mm-hmm, them. So thank you for doing that. Do you have a motto that you live by?
A motto? Right now, I think as I've started into my career, it's seizing the moment and just going for
it.
Pretty much. And I think... one of my favorite quotes, it's an oldie but goodie, and it's interesting because it spoke to me when I was younger, and it's come with me up until today. And it's a Shakespearean quote from Julius Caesar, and I may botch this up a little bit, but pretty much how it reads is, "The coward dies many times and the valiant tastes of death but once." And I really carry that with me as I make decisions in, you know, in my life, of being able to take the appropriate risks, and not the self-destructive ones, of course.
Right, right.
And
but you have to be a risk taker as an entrepreneur.
Exactly.
You just do.
Exactly. And if you don't, that's kind of like that quote speaks to you, is that you not literally die, but you mute yourself in your passion, in your career, that if it's something, especially being younger, of being able to, it's easier to take those risks, mm-hmm, because there might not be as much responsibility, like having families and children.
Sure.
And so really kind of going back to that idea of seizing the moment.
Right, right. And I think also understanding, you know, like really in the end, what's the worst that can happen? On the flip side of that coin, I also like to, because sometimes I feel like that there's pressure put on entrepreneurs of taking these big risks. And certainly with big risks can come very big rewards, but also understanding who you are and what you're obviously very driven and passionate about what you're doing. And and looking to expand in a bigger way. And I love that. And I also love the entrepreneur who understands who they are and that might not be their quest, and maybe staying small a little bit, but within that realm they find full satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
That's not my personality. Well, it's just not, you know, but I know a lot of people who are very happy and very satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not looking to take on multiple offices or multiple stores or because with it comes greater responsibility, greater risk, greater, in a way, possibly more work unless you're very organized and systemized. So just understanding who you are. But I love that quote. I love Shakespeare, and that wasn't one that I remembered, so I'll add that to my quotes, because
it gives
you a lot to think about, and I like the way you explained it as well.
Thank you.
Is there any kind of, like when you think about growth, is there like a dream collaborator that you would love to do something with, someone to do something with?
Who I would like to work with?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Or maybe just someone that you're really, truly inspired by. So maybe they don't even live anymore, but they kind of shape.
There's definitely people like...
I didn't prepare you for these questions, I know.
I'm thinking there's definitely people that I would love to meet in my field, like Yalom, and actually meeting Marsha Linehan face-to-face as opposed to just seeing her on the stage and listening to her. And I think Freud would be interesting. But I have to say, the people I work with right now, the team I'm working with at Westside DBT is so inspirational, and I'm surrounded by such remarkable people that it's so satisfying to the soul that I think that we actually may not know the people that we want to work collaboratively with until we meet them. And I feel that I've actually found them.
That's true. Yeah, I like that. Do you have a proudest moment?
Oh, gosh. Absolutely. Passing my licensing test. Yeah. I cried. It was so just the most amazing experience, and one of those moments that will definitely be stuck in my memory bank, and I'll never forget just how overwhelming I felt, and taking the risk of leaving a treatment center that I was definitely set up
and safe, and
yes,
yeah,
and feeling absolutely alive and free and being able to set out and do what I want to do.
So I love all of the things that you've talked about, building a support system, taking risk, not being fearless, knowing what some of your skills are, of the fact that you do have drive and that you are constantly educating yourself and recognizing how to be true to yourself and feed your soul and having two offices and yet still finding that supportive group and everything. In the end, how do you define success?
Mm-hmm. I think by being in a place that you feel that you're doing exactly what you want to be doing and having the utmost passion for it and that's a tough one. I'm trying to formulate my words in my head, but I think it really goes back. It goes to that idea of just doing exactly what you love, and I think that when you do that, you thrive in an emotional way, in a spiritual way, in a financial way, that the success is you become rich in all areas.
I think that's so true. And I love that because a lot of people are still, some of them are young and some of them are old, but a lot of people get trapped into doing something because they just feel like they should, mm-hmm. and they keep doing it. But success isn't necessarily a bank balance. It's something so much deeper and more personal than that. And I like the way you explain that. And I think it's so, so very, very true. Was there a piece of advice that you got that has stuck with you, or that you were so thankful that someone gave you that? You mentioned a lot about other people being a sponge, soaking up knowledge, and having people who kind of helped you along the way. Was there one piece of advice that stands out? That
I think I might have mentioned it earlier, is to the interns out there, to find a place that you've heard that has really great supervision, and to try as many different things as you can, because now is the time to do it. And it doesn't look funny on your resume if you've been only at a place for a year, because it's expected as an intern. So it's the one moment where you get to have a really kind of all over the place resume.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of my kids when they were little. You know, we signed them up for soccer and we signed them up for acting.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
You know, we signed them up for everything, and it may have looked like they were overscheduled, but we were really just trying to figure out what it is they liked.
And what they're good at, too.
You know, yeah, exactly. So I do. I think that's very good advice that to share with someone. So we only have like a minute left. We have a couple of minutes left, but is there anything that you want to share with our listeners that if you, you know, besides the fact of going out and doing the intern, which I think is very interesting, but why don't you also give your website? I bet this is interesting for you, having me ask you all the questions. You're used to asking
on the other side.
Yeah. But why don't you give them your website too?
Okay. So there's two. My personal website is www.jenniferbielertherapy.com.
And Bieler is spelled B-I-E-L-E-R.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. And then also at www.westsidedbt.com, and there you can actually see all the bios of the different therapists that's part of the team.
Fantastic. If you had to do it all over again, would you? Or
yes,
would you do anything different?
No, not different. Definitely not different.
Okay.
I love my journey, and it's been a remarkable one.
Okay, so then what did yes and no mean?
So yes, or no, I wouldn't do it over again, because I love where I'm at right now. And yes, and no, because it's a long road. It absolutely is a long road, that it takes a lot of commitment and motivation and drive to set out and go to grad school and do your internship, finish all the hours, submit them, take the licensing tests, and you pass
both of
them. So
be really sure that this is the path you want to go on before you venture down this road.
Yes, because it does. It takes a lot of commitment. So that would be the no part, because it takes a lot of energy. And then the yes part is that there's a part of me that had so much fun doing it, and then I get to go back and see some of the people that I've lost contact with.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for being a part of the show. I've loved talking to you and finding out more about the new kind of therapy and just the therapy in general that you do and what your approach is, and being able to find out what your life as an entrepreneur is all about. So thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much, Jan. I appreciate it. I had a great time.